Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Delta Airlines is partnering with DraftKings and YouTube to offer in-flight gaming. And the potential cost of Canadians not traveling to the U.S. on vacation becomes part of the tariff discussions.
American Airlines is rumored to be on the verge of a crackdown on carry-on bags. You know, the ones that are way too big to meet the size requirement and take up all the space in the overhead bins. Well, yep, those bags, those are the ones. More on our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:25.
What is the criteria for choosing the best cabin on a cruise ship? Ned Levy from Travelers United has a great rundown for us at 11:35.
And what does a lifelong traveler see when he looks into his crystal ball? Well, I'm going to corner Mark and get some of his wisdom on a variety of travel topics coming up at 11:45.
Welcome to the show that makes you a smarter traveler next time you hit the road. Welcome to today's edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
I've been everywhere, man.
Aruba, Jamaica,
solo, Seattle.
Get your kicks.
With the show.
Welcome, my friends, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, live and in living radio today, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget now, follow along and get links to our special guests and more at TravelGuysRadio.com. Well, here I am in my broadcast tower in Rancho Cordova, and Mark, he has been forced to have to go to all the way across the pond there to beautiful Kona, Hawaii. Welcome to the show, Mark. How's it looking in Kona?
It's a tough job, Tom, but somebody has to do it, you know. Folks say, wow, have you gotten, you know, rich in 40 plus years in the travel industry? And I say, well, depends on how you define rich, I guess. I don't have a big stack of money, but if I did, what would I spend it on? The kind of stuff that I get to do on a pretty regular basis. So this is one of my favorite spots on the planet. We're staying at the King Kamehameha Hotel on the big island here in Kona. Those of you who have been here before, the King Cam, as it's referred to by locals, is definitely a landmark place. It's got a great location. It is not the fanciest hotel in the islands. It's now a Courtyard by Marriott, and it's showing a little bit of signs of wear and tear, but it's still a nice place to stay, and it has location, location, and location. I mean, you can walk across the street to five or six or seven different restaurants. We'll go to the luau tonight on the grounds here, which if you're going to go to a luau in Hawaii, the best one is right here at the King Kamehameha Hotel. Folks named Island Breeze have been doing it for a long, long time, and they do it with a little more enthusiasm, and I just think that it's a better show and better food for about the same price that you pay anywhere else. So if you're coming over here, that's something. And we went to dinner last night, a couple of us at Quinn's. My buddy Tyler and I went down to Quinn's, which is just across the street from the King Cam. And I just want to tell you, if you come over here, you're looking for a place to eat. It's called Quinn's. It's not a very big place. And they do take reservations, however, just not on the day of. But so if you walk up, you might have to wait a little bit. But, man, I had like the best meal that I've had on the road in a long, long, long time. At Quinn's. In fact, we're going to go back after the Super Bowl game on, you know, the Super Bowl over here, Tom, starts at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So
yeah, that's right.
Super Bowl for lunch. Anyways, today we're going up to, up the hill to Hawaiian Vanilla, which is, the Redicop family's, they've been up there for a long, long, long time and growing, vanilla on the slopes of, the mountains here on the Big Island. And, we will learn all about how vanilla is produced and then have a wonderful vanilla laced lunch. So we're having a good time here, and I just for value in Hawaii, I think the Big Island rains a lot in Hilo. It's a really pretty area, but it rains a lot. Of course, the volcano is between Hilo and Kona, so if you're a volcano fan, there's almost always something going on. We've got a little fog in the air here today, volcano fog, but other than that, life is perfect. It's I know it's been raining some there at home, but it's 70s and very nice here in Hawaii.
Well, all right. That's I've been to Kona. I had a family that lived there. We used to go and spend time. That was our anchor island, if you will, and then island hop over to the other islands from time to time. But Mark's right. Kona is a really sweet place. If you're looking for huge, big, sandy beaches, well, forget about that.
Yeah.
But there is so much more to see on the islands than just white beaches. In fact, I think a lot of the sand that's on in Honolulu was imported from other islands anyway. All right. Well, you know, next week Mark's going to be in Maui, and so we'll hit on all of that between now and over the next couple of weeks. All right. You got the Travel Guys, and at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And with it, once again, on his cell phone from Hawaii, here's Mark.
Thank you, Thomas. A little bit of that lingering cough that so many people around Sacramento seem to have. Listen, start off with a little Hawaii story here in the news. The governor has allocated over $6 million to boost tourism recovery, particularly on Maui because of the fire in 2023. And also, this is kind of interesting, a potential drop in arrivals from California after the recent Los Angeles County fires. They expect that a lot fewer people will be traveling to, you know, Hawaii is the number one destination for people who live in Los Angeles County when they're leaving town, out-of-state destination. So they're saying that I hadn't really thought about that, but, you know, people's lives are in disarray, so they're not probably looking to come to the islands anytime soon. This is a really interesting story, Tom. Delta Airlines, celebrating 2 years of free Wi-Fi, the press release says. The airline has confirmed plans to offer in-flight gaming through a partnership with DraftKings as well as YouTube. Passengers want a, quote, in-flight experience similar to what they have at home, including more ways to engage and stay entertained, which is why we're excited to continue scaling Delta products and in-flight entertainment. There is a lot of money to be made here. I would just tell you, you got people on airplanes who have nothing to do, and I think they've hit into, I think that this is going to be maybe not as big as checking bags and selling seat assignments, but I think this is potentially, I think you'll see every airline will have a gaming partnership in no time flat, and if this works, I think that you're going to see, because you don't think Delta is going to let people, is going to let YouTube and DraftKings onto their airplanes for free, do you? I mean,
no. You know, I'm just assuming, like other types of gambling situations, they'll take a percentage of how much is perhaps gambled, as well as charges to YouTube and DraftKings.
And it doesn't have to be a big number. I mean, I'm guessing that, you know, I have no idea, but 0.5% or 1% or 0.25%. I mean, you have to be careful, because some gamblers are smarter than others, and they know the difference between a sucker bet and a bet where the house has a fairly minimal advantage and they actually have a chance to win. And so, but somewhere, either these guys are going to pay a fee to get onto the airplanes, or they're going to pay a percentage, or more likely they're going to pay a little bit of both. But people on airplanes may have an additional thing to do, and Delta has figured out an additional way to get your money. Tom, have you ever heard of a place called Pigeon Forge, Tennessee?
I have, but I'm trying to place where I heard that. Tell me more.
Well, it's the gateway to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, but which was founded in 1934, but it became a major tourism destination when Dollywood opened in 1986.
Oh, yeah.
She attracted 1 million visitors in her first season, now attracts 3.5 million visitors. This little town of Pigeon Forge has become a boom town, basically. And you can attribute 100% of, I've been there many times. We take tour groups there on an irregular basis. They have wonderful Christmas shows and Christmas lights and stuff like that. So it's and it's not too terribly far from Nashville. But anyway, Dolly Parton, I thought it was kind of interesting. Her theme park basically built an entire city. And most of the people who live there will tell you that it's a reasonably decent place to live. You know, they won't say, we wish for the old days when all of this stuff wasn't here. They're like, wow, we, you know, we're a real city now, and this is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Norwegian and Princess are offering refunds to people amid California fires. This probably doesn't apply to people in our area, but if you know somebody in Southern California and they're fretting over a cruise that they have booked, at least two cruise lines are offering some flexibility and refunds in light of the fire situation. Here's an interesting Super Bowl story. Marriott and Jason Kelce are partnering for a Super Bowl contest. They're doing a look-alike contest in New Orleans. The first Marriott Bonvoy member to find the real Kelce among 31 look-alikes will win a VIP Super Bowl experience, including a stay at a Kelce-fied suite and tickets to the game. My guess is that this has already happened. Doesn't say when it takes place, but since the game is tomorrow, my guess is that it's already happened. That would be fun to, maybe Marriott will post it somewhere online and we'll find it and post it for you. Southwest Airlines, another little update here, says they're going to start retrofitting aircraft with premium cabins mid-year in 2025 as it transitions to assigned seating. They're going to start with their 737-800s and then go to the 700s. So the idea is, of course, they're going to move the seats and create extra legroom. Also, Southwest's cabins, some of them have been updated, so they're going to update more of those cabins with more new seats. Those seats are slimmer, so that will give you, that will help you regain some of the space that you're losing. For those who don't, who aren't airline geeks and don't follow such things, Southwest actually has the best legroom in economy, regular economy, of any carrier right now. They have an inch more than everybody else. You're about to lose that precious little inch as they, and probably another one, as they create extra space seats that they can sell for more money in the part of the plane. And Southwest will have all assigned seating on all of its aircraft by the first part of next year. Here's an interesting story. The whole tariff situation has lots of ramifications on both sides of the border. But U.S. Travel said last week that tariffs on Canada could impact inbound visitation and the U.S. travel industry. Canada is the number one source of international visits to the United States. Did you know that, Tom?
No, but I mean, they're so close. Why wouldn't it be?
Well, exactly. So a 10% reduction in Canadian travel means 2 million fewer visits and $2.1 billion in lost spending. Favorite places for Canadians to go to? Florida, Nevada, New York, Texas, and California.
California.
So the reality is that if these tariffs come into be in some, and there's been discussion already in Canada, folks I know up there are like, there's already programs on saying, you know, don't go to the United States. They don't want our money anyway. They're not our friends. Stay here, spend your money in Canada. Those types of things, programs are already underway in Canada. So it's, I still don't get the whole Canadian tariff thing, but maybe people who are smarter than me understand it. Why you would piss off your best friends forever and ever is just completely beyond me. Remember we talked about an airport charge, a £10 airport charge. If you went to Heathrow Airport, that was going to be instigated this year in April, and they got so much, and then they decided that, well, they would make that £10 charge apply to connecting passengers also. They got so much pushback, they ditched it. So way to go, folks. Sometimes the people can still vote and with their feet and make their feelings known, and they ditched the fee for connecting passengers. If you're going strictly to or from Heathrow, you still have to pay it, but at least we got rid of one junk fee, and that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. Remember, check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Often you hear us talk about Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House, the place in Sacramento for hand-cut steaks and jumbo lobster tails right over there off of Highway 50 in Hazel. You know, I went to a little gathering for a friend who was leaving town, and they had it at Rudy's. And Christina, the super chef there, she put together a nice little six-course small-bite meal with a bunch of foods that I can't hardly even pronounce the names, but it started off with a mini charcuterie. You know what a charcuterie, Mark? Do you know what a charcuterie is?
I do, but don't. It's just a bunch pile of meat and cheese and crackers and stuff like that. It'd be a lot easier for me if they just call it a pile of meat and cheese and crackers.
A charcuterie to me is like a, except for this one. This is extra special, but it would be similar to a Lunchable for kids with a juice box. But it's like a Lunchable for adults with wine instead of the juice box. Anyway, just kidding. The charcuterie was great. Fresh, warm jumbo shrimp, filet mignon. Bottom line is, if you're going to have a gathering, you want to have something catered, you can customize the menu with Christina, and she can put together some magical dishes to impress your friends. And not only that, they have a banquet facility there that you can bring 15 to 60 people, and they'll take care of your banquet for you. One of my favorite places, Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House. You can find it right off of Highway 50 in Hazel, and we'll see you there. Next up on the Travel Guys, off the road we go. American Airlines rumored to be on the verge of a crackdown on those giant carry-on bags. Standing next to somebody carrying a bag, and you're going, man, shouldn't that bag be checked under the plane? It's big enough to hide a small child. So, Mark, tell me a little bit about what American Airlines is rumored to be on the verge of doing in regards to carry-on bags.
Sir, you kind of hit the nail right on the head there. It's for those of us who make at least some attempt to be somewhat close to the size of a carry-on bag, a legal carry-on bag. It is somewhat disconcerting when people get on the plane and bring these things that, you know, they're not carry-on bags. They're not even close to carry-on bags. They're full-size suitcases, and the person didn't want to check it, or they've got a tight connection, or there's a lot of reasons for people to do that. But American Airlines is talking about, there's a rumor, apparently, it's been reported in a couple of different places that American is considering, and this is what you would do if you're an airline. You would throw out the rumor, first of all, and hope that it might get people's attention and they might start thinking twice about trying to bring a bag on the plane that's bigger than what they have decided is a legal carry-on. We only have a couple minutes here, but what I wanted to suggest to people, if you are at next time you're at the airport, if you have a carry-on suitcase and you're wondering, you know, there are specific, you can go online and there are specific dimensions and stuff like that. And keep in mind that the airlines are talking about this would include wheels and handles and all that kind of jazz. So it would be somewhat limiting. A lot of bags that are carried on would not be legal. If you want to know if your bag's legal, don't go up to the gate where you're getting on the plane and try it, because now you're in an awkward position if it doesn't fit. But go to one of the gates that are empty at the airport. If you're flying Southwest, pick a Southwest gate that's empty or an Alaska gate that's empty. They've got those sizers up by the front of the gate. And just take your bag up and put it in the sizer or put it against the measurement item there. And you can tell whether or not your bag will be legal. So that if they say, well, gee, you know, it's not going to be legal someday, and they crack down on you, you'll know that, gosh, you were over the line. And perhaps you then go and say, well, you know, I'll get a smaller bag or something like that. It would make a huge difference, I think, in boarding aircraft, and that's what they're talking about. It's not only a source of money to get people to check more bags, but if they could gain that extra 4 or 5 minutes in boarding planes and people getting off of planes because it takes them so long to drag all that crap out of the overhead, then that would mean big money to the airlines. So this is not just an attempt to get you to check a bag that is a little bit over the carry-on size. It's an attempt to make the system run more efficiently. And personally, I take tour groups on the road, and lots of times these people, my travelers are in the high boarding groups numbers. So when they're getting on the plane, the carry-on space is getting limited. So if the rules are followed, my customers are going to have room to put their bags in the overhead when they get on board, because they are generally not breaking those rules. So for people who are bringing a garment bag, the kitchen sink, the garbage can and the toilet on board the plane, you're going to have to eliminate one of those. So just please know that. And I will tell you, if one airline does this, if one airline is brave enough to piss off half their flyers and do this and stand by it, you can expect the other airlines will fall in order very, very quickly. So just keep we'll keep an eye on this. I personally think for most people, this would prove to be a good thing. And for some of the boobs that bring, you know, stuff on that they shouldn't be bringing on, why then I'm sorry, but you might have to check that. Either that or argue for a long time with a gate agent, and that's an argument that you're not likely to win.
You know, I find it interesting that I've never seen, of course, I don't fly nearly as often as you, Mark, but I've never seen anybody pulled aside with those large, bigger than carry-ons and send them packing. Do you ever spot that?
You don't see it very often. And it surprises me when I'm on the plane and I see somebody get on with a suitcase that is clearly twice the size of, no one could look at it and say that's a carry-on bag. Mm-hmm. And then when they put it in, of course, when they put it in the overhead, it won't go in the right way. So it has to be turned sideways. So now you've eliminated somebody else's ability to put a carry-on bag up there. And let's face it, you know, most planes will get within 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 suitcases of having enough room. They're always begging people to please. Here's the deal, folks. Take the oversized carry-on, get it through security. When you get up to the gate, then they'll offer to gate check it for you for free. You get it on the other end, you just cheated the airline out of $40. It's a real easy way to beat the system. It isn't that tough. You don't have to actually carry the big bag on the plane. Just wait for them to ask for volunteers to check the bags, because almost every plane is full these days. And when they do ask for volunteers, you step right up. They take your bag. You've saved your $40. Life is good.
Well, there you go. There's a travel tip that we haven't used before. You know, I'm not much on carry-ons. I that's because I fly Southwest and they don't charge me. So I'm happy just to put most everything under the plane. Carry on maybe a backpack with some goodies and personal items and so forth. But I'll never be faced with worrying about trying to carry a full-size piece of luggage onto a plane.
Hang around, because the interview that's coming up with Ned Levy, if you travel on cruise ships, boy, he's got some terrific information about picking out cabins.
Yeah, Ned wrote a really great column about a month ago. When I contacted him, he was on a cruise, so we had to wait for him to get back, but we'll hear a little bit about that. Ned wrote a really wonderful column called Top 7 Tips to Choose a Great Cabin on a Cruise Ship. And when I read it, I thought, wow, this is going to make people smarter travelers / cruisers, because especially if you're a first time cruiser, or you've maybe this is your second time and your first time didn't go so well because maybe you didn't pick the right cabin. These are some things that Ned takes into account both cost and some other factors. Ned, welcome back to the Travel Guys.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
Thank you, my friend. Listen, let's dive into this. Picking a great cabin on a cruise ship. You open the cruise ship book, brochure, or you go online and you see there's a list of, heck, there could be 15, 20, even more different categories of cabins. How do you get through that and figure out where your interest might actually lie in terms of picking a cabin according to the list of choices in a brochure?
Yeah, on my cruise ship, I was just in Australia, Tasmania, and New Zealand. We had 20 classes of cabins on the ship, but when it really comes down to it, they boil down to 5 cabin choices. Inside view, which we didn't have on our ship, but they have the inside views on the really big cruise ships, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people. Ocean view, balcony, and suites. By just boiling it down to those 5, it becomes a whole lot easier than the 20. The 20 are usually a little bit different in size, a little bit different in which deck they're on. And while those are important, you need to get the basics down first. And to me, that's inside or suite or balcony, one of the 5 main cruise types.
Ned, let me ask you, inside or outside? Obviously, I would think that outside cabins are going to be a little bit more expensive. You got a view to the ocean and all. Out inside would be probably cheaper. Any advice on which one you would choose based on what factors?
Yes, inside are definitely less expensive, including the inside view ones, where on some of the big ships, they'll have a promenade in the middle, and an inside view is when one inside cabin has a window, but they're looking at another inside cabin on the other side of the ship. My basic rule of thumb is if it's a short trip, 3 or 4 days, where there's not a lot of days at sea, where you have a ton of time on your own, an inside cabin is just fine. I have no problem. Save some money. Spend money elsewhere, especially going ashore. Do a special excursion. But if I'm on a long cruise, and my last cruise was 15 days, 14 nights, I want an outside cabin because we had 6 days at sea during that time. And I wanted to be able to sit outside in a private space, have some breakfast, or have an afternoon lunch or tea. Yeah, it's a whole lot nicer also to wake up and get that nice sun coming in your window.
Now, right. Ned, you said something about sitting outside. So obviously you're talking about an outside room with a balcony.
Yes. And the modern cruise ships, for the most part, most of the cabins that have views through a window, they also have a balcony. The ship companies, the cruise lines, realize that people want balconies. They want to be able to be outside. They've seen the TV shows and the movies that constantly never show inside cabins. They don't show looking through big windows. There virtually are no portholes except for cruise anymore. There are large windows, even if you don't have a balcony. And from that, people want balconies if possible. And it opens up a whole lot of extra opportunities for them to enjoy their cruise compared to an inside cabin or just looking through a window to the outside.
We're talking with Ned Levy. Ned is with Travelers United. He has just returned from a cruise in Australia, and he's talking to us about to make you a little smarter cruiser, particularly when it comes to picking your cabin. Ned, the location of the cabin, we've talked about inside and outside here in balconies. Between the bow and the stern, there are parts of the ship that are noisier, less noisy, more stable. Talk a little bit about that's a pretty big category, but talk a little bit about those issues.
Well, noise is really important, and I think every traveler knows that from being in a hotel and being next to the elevator or being next to the ice maker room with lots of foot traffic in front of your door. It's noisy. You want to sleep through the night. It's tough. So the first thing I do with noise is I make sure I'm away from stairwells. I'm away from elevators. I'm away from the major public rooms like casinos and restaurants. And I'm also want to be well below pools, grills, and such, because people get up really early on cruise ships. They'll start jogging. They'll start having breakfast. And they're also going to the main restaurants for their breakfast and get up early, especially if they have an early excursion off the trip. And if you have a late excursion and want to sleep, you need to stay away from that. Forward and aft is versus the middle of the ship, called midships, it's another question. The aft cabins usually have pretty large balconies on a lot of ships and a lot of really good features, except that there's typically over the stern thrusters used to power the ships. And as a result, you can really feel a lot of vibrations back there compared to other parts of the ship. And no ship is vibration-free when it's underway. They all you can feel that you're moving. You can feel those thrusters working hard. The problem, the main problem, if you're in the forward part of the ship, the bow, is it's the least stable in high seas. It's really going to bounce around, even with the big stabilizers that the major cruise ships have, which are like wings that stick out from the sides. They stop the ship from yawing right to left, starboard to port. They don't do much for going back and forth with the bow going up and down. It's great to be up front, but if you get seasick at all, you don't want to be there.
That was that was my question, Ned. I get motion sickness when I go out on the ocean in mid-size craft and so forth, and I've been wanting to do a cruise. But with that being said, that was some great information. I would not want to take the front of the run, front of the craft, but perhaps. Where's the?
You want to be in the middle.
In the middle, okay.
You want to be in the middle because everything rotates through the middle. So the middle doesn't move very much compared to the front or the back of the ship, the bow or the stern.
Got it.
Midships is what they call it. It's pretty stable. My wife gets a little seasick from time to time, so we always go to midships. I've been in terrible storms and all. I don't tend to get sick. I don't care. I do what I need for her.
Yeah, yeah, good. So I'd be a midshipman. There's no doubt about it.
And Ned, you and I share one thing in common here. Before we wrap this up, you mentioned at the end of your article that you prefer ships with passenger capacities under 1,000. You and me both.
Yes.
There was a day and a time when 1,000 people on a cruise ship was a big ship, but such is not the case anymore. You talked here a little bit about why you prefer a little bit smaller ships a little bit. There aren't many of those of us left. Address that, if you would.
I want to be able to move around freely. I don't want to have to worry about large crowds. I don't want to have to worry about having to reserve a spot at the pool if I want a lounge chair. And on the large ships, there's so many people there that there's a lot of crowds, and you're going to be going to meals with a ton of people, and it starts to get really noisy. And I just want to avoid that. And I want to be able to take excursions off the ship, which only involve maybe 20 people at most on my bus or van. If you're on a big ship and you go on an excursion, you have 36 to 48 people on a bus. And all that has to happen is two or three that way don't understand that everybody has to cooperate. They'll go shopping and they won't show up on time. And so you're always running late and you miss stuff. And I don't want to do that. So I stick to ships that are under 1,000, and I'm very happy on those cruise ships.
Ned, you have made some terrific points here to help make people a smarter cruiser. We will post a copy of Ned's article at travelguysradio.com so you can access it. Tom mentioned at the beginning of all of this that Ned writes for Travelers United, and that's Charlie Leoka's outfit, and they have a paid website at Travelers United. You can go there for free, but they also have a membership. So if you travel a lot, you could do yourself very well by sending a few shekels to Charlie and his crew. That would get you all of this information in your email box on a regular basis, just like it does me. Ned, thank you again for giving us your
pleasure.
Time.
Thank you.
Safe travels, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
I'll look forward to that. Thanks again.
Ned Levy with Travelers United here with the Travel Guys. Mark, a lot of stuff banging around in the world in regards to travel, and some of them things that aren't, but very well may affect travel down the road. Yeah. You got a couple of minutes to do this?
Yeah, let's do. And, you know, just one second here before we get started. Wasn't that a great rundown by Ned of if you're not a really experienced cruiser, or even if you are, there should be some tidbits of information you can pull out of that interview. What a great job Ned did in making folks smarter cruisers. All right, go for it, Mr. Romano.
Yeah, in short, it made me want a cruise. I can tell you that. I feel like I got 90% of what I need. All right, let's start off with some of the world news or news that we've been hearing most recently in regards to tariffs with Canada and Mexico and such. What are your thoughts in regards to how that might impact travel to those countries?
You know, Tom, travel is kind of a I've said this before on the show, is kind of, when it comes to politics, is kind of bipartisan. Most people, when they travel, are not traveling for political reasons. They're not going someplace to make a protest or to stand for something in another country or something from their own. They're going to visit and to learn and to see places. And I think that's probably why travel tends to be nonpartisan. But as we saw the other night when they booed the U.S. national anthem in Toronto at an NBA game, when all of this tariff thing was shaking out, people are people. And if you get in their face too much, why, then they'll probably get in yours. I would say that the biggest effect that tariffs would have, particularly to the North, I would wonder, Canadians are just incredibly wonderful people. People in our own country could take a lesson from Canadians on how to behave and how to treat each other and stuff like that. They're just nice people. Occasionally you run into a Quebecer who's not real happy about people speaking English, but Canadians by and large are just the kindest, nicest people. So why would we want to piss them off? I mean, I don't, there's a lot of layers to all of this, but what it comes down to is if you go to Canada and they're mad at our country, will they be mad at us?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to Mexico, you know, will they spit in your soup or, get crummy service, or will they make some expression of so that they can, quote, get back at you or show you how they feel? That would be my biggest concern. I would hope that it wouldn't come to that. And maybe this is all a bunch of negotiating posture and stuff. Let's hope so. Let's hope that they can figure out solutions to this that keep us from having to get into this kind of discussion with our neighbors, because these are the two countries that Americans visit the most. And people from Mexico and Canada come here legally a lot and spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, and by and large, conduct themselves pretty well. So, you know, I hope that it doesn't come to us throwing spit wads at each other.
We're talking with Mark Hoffman. We're doing the a little segment here about Ask the Travel Expert. One thing I know everybody's concerned about, and that is the cost of travel. Signs of travel inflation. Is it slowing down, Mark? Hotels, transportation, food, and so on?
It is. We're starting to see for the first time in a while. Remember, I'm a tour operator, so when I go and I block hotel rooms, I'm blocking 15 or 20 or 25 rooms at a shot, sometimes for multiple nights, doing business with hotels in many cases I've done business with before. We are seeing room rates in many cases. I'm going back and they're saying, hey, I can get you the same rate I got you last year, whereas last year was a 15 or 20% increase. So it is definitely slowing down, but supply and demand is a big part of it. The Canadian Rockies prices have just exploded, and they're going to stay up there as long as there are twice as many people who want to occupy those rooms in June, July, and August and September as they have rooms, especially with the big fire they had in Jasper last year that knocked out a couple of big properties. So supply and demand is, I think, taking back over from inflation. And so places that are in huge demand, the prices are going to keep going up. Places that are, you know, the demand has moderated a little bit, secondary cities, you're going to see destinations, think Sacramento. You may see the hotel rates leveling off. And the same thing with attractions. Restaurants are a whole nother story that has more to do, you know, eggs and bacon and things like that that have exploded in price. That's nothing that those people can control.
Yeah, the waffle shops announced just recently that they were going to add 50 cents to the cost of your breakfast because of the cost of eggs. I expected that to happen. Yeah. You know, it seems like people look at travel differently post-COVID. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. The people who travel with me, I tend to have clients who are, let's say, 60 plus in terms of their age demographic. I don't know that they have changed the way they look at it, because when you get older, you have the money, you can afford to travel, then, and that's important to you, then that's one of your priorities, what you do. What we have seen is people in the 20 to 60 age demographic have reordered travel. When they, I think my theory is that they missed it and they realized how important travel was to just living a good life, being able to go and meet other people and see other things and stuff was a bigger priority than people thought. And when they couldn't do it, they realized how much of a priority. And I don't think that people in that 20 to 60 age bracket will ever, I think travel will remain elevated in priority probably for the rest of their lives.
I'm talking with Mark Hoffman. We're talking about travel, which we do on this show on a regular basis. But we're kind of drilling into some specifics. And here's one. Your favorite off-season destination, Mark?
Oh, wow. Key West. And I just got back from there.
Okay.
I've been, I'm as a tour operator, I get to organize tours and take people to wonderful places. And I've been taking people to Key West every January for a dozen, 15 years now.
What's the big appeal?
Key West is an end-of-the-road destination, and end-of-the-road destinations are always different. And Key West has this wonderful conglomeration of people who couldn't go any further. There's a lot of LGBT people there. There's a lot of sailors and fishermen and stuff there. And they just come together to make this incredible mix that works. And, you know, there's drag queens on one end of the street and cruise ships on the other. And it just works in Key West. And I would, boy, just put it on your bucket list. If it's not there, put it on your bucket. And don't take a cruise that stops there for a day and for 8 hours and say you've been to Key West. You need to go there and stay two or three nights and so that you can get the flavor. Because not every destination has a flavor, but Key West has one. That would be my favorite off-season destination, with an asterisk to where I am now in Hawaii.
All right. Well, you know, a lot of times with the cruise ships there and so forth, I've heard you discuss that it can get kind of crazy. In Key West, is there enough room and a few enough cruise ships that it doesn't get crazy?
It will get crazy during the day, but fortunately, those people have to go back home at night and get back on the ship and go away and have dinner and stuff like that. So that allows the destination to breathe and to return to its normal self. And Key West, fortunately, doesn't have a major cruise ship in town every day. And when you get into a cruise ship destination, look, get up earlier in the morning. Have an hour to yourself before all those people get off the ship and think about doing something in the evening. Because in many cases, they will be back on board.
I think we've got time for one more, Mark. Your travelers, sports leisure travelers, you take them lots of places. Your friends, you talk a lot about travel. What is at the top of their wish list?
International destinations are really popular right now. Niagara Falls, for some reason, has been one of our hottest destinations for several years. Route 66 has a centennial next year. And many people have asked about that, so I suspect that that will be very popular also. Tom, we are just about out of time here. Thank you for all of the great questions. It's nice to have an opportunity just to talk to folks a little bit. Hopefully I've shared something that will make you a smarter traveler. We will be back next week live from the island of Maui as our Hawaii look continues, and we'll talk a lot about Hawaii on next week's program. In the meantime, dance like nobody's watching.
Stay well, my friends. See you next Saturday, 11 a.m.